Welcome back. Today on the podcast, I talk with Sam Golden. Sam is the founder and CEO at Minimal Golf, and he's awesome. He's a super easygoing guy, and when we recorded, he was actually in Puerto Rico, right near Rincon, which is one of my favorite places on earth. But in our conversation, we talk his journey, we talk his story, we talk how he grew up, and he wasn't really a golfer, and he ends up getting a golf scholarship in a interesting and weird situation that he didn't really know was coming. And since then, he fell in love with the game, and it's been a part of his life ever since. And in 2018, he moved back to Puerto Rico, and he started to really craft the idea of Minimal Golf. And since then, he has launched Minimal Golf. They have some incredible products, and we have really an awesome giveaway going on right now too that you could enter. If you go to Minimal Golf's IG, the link is in the show notes, you can enter. If you do listen to this before Friday, February 16th, that will end at noon, but it's for one of their golf bags, really incredible product. So go enter that giveaway. But Sam is awesome. You'll enjoy the show. Like I said, very easygoing guy. And I think me and him have a lot of similarities. And another brand that I love, and I think y'all have probably heard on the show, is Rebel Rabbit. Rebel Rabbit is on a mission to change the way we socialize. For far too long, we have thought we need to be drinking alcohol when we were socializing or kicking back and watching a game or going out with friends at night. But that's really not the case. And Rebel Rabbit is an alcohol-free seltzer. It is infused with Delta 9 THC, so you can get the feeling of kind of letting loose a little bit, but you're not going to get any of the negative harm effects, negative side effects that come along with alcohol. You'll be able to sleep great. You'll be able to wake up in the days following and be productive. You'll have no hangover. So go to their link in the show notes. They can deliver directly to your door, or they're also racking up the retailers, which they have a retailer list. But if you do go to the link in the show notes, you'll get 20% off your order. And they have a couple different levels of drinks, THC levels, and they have some incredible flavors. And I know they got some cool stuff on the way. So check them out. Order you some Rebel Rabbit seltzers and really start living healthier and socializing healthier and join the mission. If you are in the Southeast, you've probably seen Spinks. Spinks convenience stores have been around now for 50 years. They really have an incredible story. And what I didn't know growing up was how much they do for the communities that they're in. They give back millions and millions of dollars to the communities they're in, to incredible organizations and nonprofits. So all I ask is when you see a Spinks, make sure to stop in and support your local Spinks, because I can guarantee you they are supporting the communities that they are in. They are continuing to grow. So next time you see a Spinks, stop in, get your gas, get your snacks, get your goodies, and support them, because they are supporting the community that you are in right there. If you haven't already, give the show a 5-star rating. You can give it a written review on Apple. That would be great. Or just a 5-star rating on any other platform. That'd be much appreciated by me. But without further ado, here's my conversation with Sam Golden. Sam, what's up? You're joining me from one of my favorite places on earth. But first off, how you doing?
I'm doing well, man. Thanks for having me. Yeah, I'm in Puerto Rico right now. It's, one of my favorite places on earth. I got here through golf, actually. I played a golf course here. I played a qualifier for a PGA Tour event, and then I played this golf course over here near me in Isabela, and I just like fell absolutely like head over heels in love with the golf course in Puerto Rico. So I come here as much as often as I can.
Was that the is that the Prince course or whatever they call it?
It's called Royal Isabela.
Ah, there you go. What is the little town you're in there? I was thinking, I've always pronounced it wrong, but you say it much better than me.
I'm in Aguadilla, and Aguadilla is like, if you think of Puerto Rico as this rectangle, it's 30 miles north to south, or maybe like 35 miles north to south and 100 miles east to west. San Juan, like the capital city, is on the northeast corner somewhat, and Aguadilla is the northwest corner. And that's where I am, in Aguadilla, on the northwest corner. There's an airport real close to me. BQN is the airport, and then the San Juan airport in San Juan. Those are the two major airports.
You're like, I would say, 15 miles north of Rincon, where I got engaged.
Yeah, it's sick, dude. That's a beautiful spot. And Yeah, we're super blessed. There's a great golf course, public golf course right next to me. Surf all the way up and down like this whole Northwest coast. And yeah, airport next door. So
do you surf or golf more?
Now I surf more.
All right.
Yeah. And I miss, dude, I talk about this a lot. Golf, I had no idea how good for my mental state golf was. And I think that isn't always the case, but like for the last 3 years of me competing, I was working with a mental coach who I just learned so much from Jason Goldsmith. He's Jason Day's mental coach. And he was at the time too. I was just really lucky to work with him. But he helped me learn a process that I went through on every single shot.
Mm-hmm.
That was one of the most beautiful micro meditations that I still have it. I just never use it because I don't golf that much. But I think that's the biggest thing I miss from golf is that every single shot was this zoned in, tuned in, focused fully on meditation. And it lasts, mine lasts about, I don't know, 15 seconds.
I was about to say, how long is it?
Yeah, but if you do, it's like 15 seconds, but it's almost like a hyper learning or like a hyper value thing. Because if you do anything we're learning, like I've been a coach for 25 years, and anything you're learning, you could do like a 4 hour session. That's great. There's this peak performance section that'll come in after like 15 to 20 minutes. It'll last for another 35 minutes and then it's going to start to taper off. But if you were to take that 4 hour session and spread it out to these little micro sessions throughout the day, like 15 minutes a session times 10 or whatever, that'd be more valuable than a straight up 4 hour session. So these little 15 second pre-shot routines are like, dude, it's just like I would leave the course and I would just always be present. I was just, cause like you just train to be present over and over and over again, 72 or less times. Hopefully you're doing one of these little meditations and it's 5 hours of your day. So, I mean, that's a third of your waking life. You're practicing meditation. So that's the thing I miss the most about golfing.
With your early life, you didn't play a lot of golf growing up. Was it skateboarding and surfing growing up? What was it for you?
So I grew up in a small town in Missouri. So there was definitely no surf in my life.
I thought you grew up. Okay, go ahead.
No, I mean, I get a lot. Like, I feel like I always kind of fit California well. And even when I was a kid, like my favorite t-shirt said PCH on it, Pacific Coast Highway. And I didn't know. Like, I remember asking my mom, I was like 9 years old. We went to the store to buy school clothes or whatever. And I'm like, this is so sick. There was like a skateboarder or a surfer on the front and it said PCH. And I was like, what's PCH, mom? And she's like, oh, Pacific Coast Highway. And then, you know, 20 years later, I moved to California and just fit really well there. But I grew up in the Midwest. I grew up in a small town in Missouri, like 10,000 people. Actually, our town, Washington, Missouri, was featured on 60 Minutes as Small Town America. That's how epitomizing that
mold
was, the epitome of the small town. So I didn't golf. I kind of grew up doing all the sports you could do in the neighborhood, and then was super into skateboarding, like loved the culture of skateboarding, even though it was tiny in my town. And then I got into golf when I was pretty, like the time I actually got into it and stayed in it. I'd played a couple times and did some other things when I was younger, but my senior year in high school, we got a golf team at my school. It was the first year they'd had it in like 20 years. And so I was like, I'm trying out for that thing. So I went, I convinced my mom to give me like a summer's worth of allowance. And I went and got a set of clubs and I went to the range and just grinded, and then convinced the coach to like give me a shot. And I did okay. Like I was the fourth player on a 5-guy team. You know, I was posting like a 42 or 43 on 9 holes just for our little school. It was okay. And so, yeah, golf wasn't like a standout for me as a child.
That makes sense, because I was looking up, you ended up going to Lincoln University for golf, and I saw it was in Missouri. I was like, dang, that's interesting for a California guy to go to golf in Missouri, but you were there the whole time.
Yeah, Lincoln was, so that was a cool, I was like a super fortunate thing. The golf team that was restarted at my school, it happened because there was a kid who was a sophomore when I was a senior, and he was really good. Like, he was Chris Bisher is his name, and he was really, really good. And his grandpa, like, funded the high school golf team to give us one so that Chris could, you know, compete in high school and then go on to, he went on to play college golf. So he graduates, goes to Mizzou. I'm 2 years out of school in, like, junior college, floundering, no idea what I'm going to do. He goes to Mizzou, D1, and then kind of redshirts. Like, he was really good, but their team was really good too, so freshmen just didn't play. He didn't fit in that well with the coach, and he got an offer to play at Lincoln. Lincoln's like the sister school to Mizzou. It's Division II. It's in Jeff City. Mizzou's in Columbia. They're close by. So he goes to Lincoln, comes back one summer, the summer after he's playing at Lincoln, and we play together, and he knows me as this crummy golfer, right? This just barely...
32 never, golfer, yeah.
Yeah. So I play with him, and I think I shot like even par or something on 9 or 18 holes, and he was like, dude, what happened to you? Like, you got really good. And I honestly, like, at that time, I didn't feel like I was good. I still felt like a pretty crummy golfer. But, you know, I started thinking about it, and he was like, man, if we had you on our team, like, he's like, do you break 80 every time you play? And I was like, yeah, for sure. My handicap's 0.5. And he's like, would you want to play at Lincoln? Could I get you, like, an interview with the coach? And at the time, I was kind of, like, opposed to it because I wanted to be a teaching pro. I had decided that, like, you know, this is where my life was going to go, and I love coaching. But I talked to the pro of my course, and I was like, should I do this? He's like, well, Sammy, you know, you're only going to get one shot at this. He's like, if you hate it, you can quit and come back here, and we'll have your job waiting for you. So I was like, all right, let's do this. So I went up and played with the coach. I played my butt off, too. I played so good. And the coach was like, full scholarship, you're on the team. And then he kicks me off a year later for, like, because I was going to the skate park every night. And he's like, we can't count on you. You care more about skateboarding than golf. And I'm like, fair enough. But yeah, I got really lucky that that kid, Chris Bisher, his grandpa started this team. And then he's the reason I played college golf, which was amazing, right up until the point I got kicked off. So,
dude, but it ends up being, I mean, a lot of the rest of your life since then. You went on like a, I mean, you really gave the mini tours an effort, right?
Yeah, I always used to say, like, when I was like 24, 25, people would be like, dude, why don't you go play? And even in college, I was the fourth man on a 5-man team. I was by all accounts, a very average college golfer, maybe definitely in the lower tier of college golfers. So I just didn't think I would play professionally ever. I never thought that it would be part of my journey. But then, like, 24, 25, I started getting a lot better, and I was practicing a lot and really diving into the swing, and I was getting pretty good. Like, I was a plus handicap, and oh my God, let's see how long this is. This Rio is like in the fighting phase right now.
How old is that kitty?
We got him at Home Depot here in Puerto Rico about, we think his birthday was like right around October 23rd.
All right.
He's like 2.5 months old.
There we go. I have a kitty. Her name is Strike. We rescued her when we redid my house. She's probably like crawling at my office door right now trying to get in, because usually the sun is beating through and she loves to lay down in here. So,
well, I'm impressed that Rio isn't biting the crap out of me right now, because he's in a phase. But anyway, so yeah, I would say, like, I don't need or want to play professional golf. Mm-hmm. It was like, I was like, I'm on this planet to coach. I love coaching. I'm so happy with my trajectory. And then I got
to start coaching.
So I was always super studious. Like, I'm a student of the game, man. Like, and surfing too, like everything. I just, my brain is not satisfied with the product description, you know? Like, I need to know. When I learned gear effect, I was like, what? Why isn't that on the box? Like, they're selling you distance, but they're not telling you how this thing even works. And I didn't learn gear effect until I had been on the range 500 balls a day for like 3 or 4 years. So I was like, I felt like I got ripped off in a lot of ways, because I was just like, dude, if I'd known that, everything would be different. So I just dove really, really deep down into the physics and the everything that how a golf club works and how to use it the best. And so as I was going down that path, I would share it with other people. And even from like when I first started learning how to hit a draw versus a slice, I would be like, dude, the ball, it's spinning and the spin is what causes it to curve. And just like a ping pong paddle, you can put whatever spin you want on it. I'm down in the range hitting hooks and I'm just like, this is the greatest thing ever. So most of my bricks.
I was a big soccer player, and the way it was described to me was like, if you want the ball to bend like a soccer kick inside to out or right to left, like I'm like, dang, that blew my mind to think about it on the golf course.
And that's like one of the most, like I taught that lesson for 2 years, what the ball's doing and why. And then I learned, I was teaching a little bit just because it was like, I was excited. I was just like, dude, I just learned a thing that's like changed my life. And so I was just doing that. And then I started doing it for money and teaching juniors and stuff. And so I just was super enamored with the whole science and the whole geometry behind the swing and the ball flight. And I just loved to coach. Even before I like floundered in school, I wanted to be a teacher. It's just like my dad was a teacher, a professor at a college and taught at a high school before that. My mom was an art and music teacher. So I think somewhere in my DNA, it's like pre-coded that I'm going to be a teacher. But anyway, so I was teaching and I was loving it. And then I was reading so much back then in the golf. I just like got through the golf stuff. And every once in a while, I'd read a good golf book. But most of the books I started reading were like biographies and like how the brain works and psychology. And at one point I was like, I can do anything. Like I can literally do anything. If I use my mind and train my mind, I can do anything. And then I was watching the US Open in 2005 and Phil Mickelson hit like some of the worst three or four shots in a row and made a dumb decision. And I remember I was sitting there on my couch watching the replay on this tiny little couch in a tiny apartment in Washington, Missouri. And I was like, I wouldn't have done that. I'm telling you, like, I believed it. I fully was like, I would have hit a good shot there because I understand this game so much better than Phil Mickelson. So
win the Masters like, that year, I think. So
what's that?
I think he won the Masters that year.
But so I'm like, that's it. I'm going to play the US Open next year and I'm going to win it. So I just like made that my goal. And as like ridiculous as that might sound to somebody else at the time, I just was like, I can do this.
How old were you then?
How old? Yeah. 25.
25.
And so I just spent a year just like researching Oakmont, the course that was going to be played in 2006. Just like, man, I was just.
Of course, yeah.
Yeah, I wanted to win there because I was still am a huge Hogan fan. I was like, this is perfect. Hogan tamed that monster. I'm going to win the US Open at Oakmont. I'm like every night before bed visualizing myself accepting the trophy. I'm doing all the work. And then I didn't make it through the first qualifier. And I was like, what do I do now? My whole vision was like, everything ended at the end of the US Open. It was like, once I win that, I'll figure out what to do next with my life. Not play professional golf, but like, let's just win that.
Yeah.
And then we'll do what's next. I didn't ever really want to play professionally. I just wanted to win that US Open to prove that I could do it. And then I didn't win. And so I'm like, what do I do now? And I was like, well, I guess I got to try again. So that was 7 years of just like
Ryan.
6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14. That was 9 years of US Open qualifiers.
Dang.
From that one stupid. Thanks, Phil Mickelson. But like you said, it's my whole life now, man. Like everything I've done has been, it's sprouted in that the fact that Chris Bisher's grandpa, if you want to go back to that, started a golf team. Never would have happened.
With YouTube golf, it's like exploded. But dude, you were on YouTube like a while back.
Legend.
I was about to say, you were a pioneer in the YouTube golf game.
Before it was cool. I think like I didn't want to go on, but I had this student. His name is Jimmy Nissen. This is so funny you're bringing this up right now. So Jimmy Nissen just bought a minimal golf bag yesterday or 2 days ago.
Nice.
Met Jimmy in 2009 in Santa Monica. I was teaching at an indoor golf studio, and I was given a lesson, and this guy walked in. I finished my lesson, and he's like, "Hey, I want to take lessons from you." And I was like, "Amazing. Like, let's go. What do you want to learn?" And he was like, "I don't have much money." And I was like, "Doesn't matter. I'll teach you for free." And he was like, "No way." And I was like, "Yeah, let's do it." And he's like, "Well, also, I helped. There was this YouTube channel called Secret in the Dirt. It's still there. But it was basically this guy, 7-1, whose real name is Mike Maves. And Maves is 7 backwards. Mike Maves was making YouTube videos at the time. And Jimmy reached out to him and was like, "Hey, Mike, I can help you make a product out of your YouTube videos, and I can help you stop selling insurance and become a golf coach guy." So Jimmy helped Mike Maves create this website, Secret in the Dirt. And Jimmy meets me and he's like, "I can do the same thing for you." And I'm like, "Well, I don't even have a YouTube channel and I probably shouldn't. Like, who am I?" And he's like, "Who's Mike Maves?" And I'm like, "Well, he knew Mo Norman and all this stuff." I gave all the reasons why I shouldn't make a YouTube channel. And at the end of it, he was just like, "Sam, you've worked with Hank Haney extensively. You've worked with Jim Hardy. You've seen and learned a lot of stuff that so many people just don't have access to. Just share that." And I was like, "All right, whatever, I'll try it." And this was 2009 or 10. And yeah, like 20,000 videos was like blowing up. If you had 20,000 views on YouTube was like, "Holy crap, you're huge." And I remember I had one video that got like 10,000 views and I was just,
boom.
I'm famous.
Yeah.
But not really. Like, wow, that's cool. And then, but yeah, it just came really naturally to me. And I felt like there was so much stuff that I had learned, to Jimmy's point, there was so much stuff that I had learned that a lot of people were not getting, didn't have access to.
Sure.
And so every day I would, almost every day, every other day or something, I would make a YouTube video and just be like, "Oh, I was teaching a lesson and this came up and this comes up a lot. This."
Yeah, you got, I think, like 750 videos or more.
A lot. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. A lot. Like, a lot of videos.
Which nowadays, I mean, dude, you can almost get overwhelmed trying to, like, figure out your golf swing on YouTube right now.
That's a problem. Well, that is a problem. And it's, I mean, it's a great thing that there's so much information, right? But then the challenge is, like, which one do I follow?
Mm-hmm.
I'm working on a project right now with 18 Birdies app, if you know them.
I do know.
So I started 18 Birdies when they were first launching, or when they were getting ready. I was like North America employee number one and was there for a little while and then left, but have been working with Eddie, the CEO, for over the last 9 years, a bunch. And we just started this project together that's going to do a phenomenal job of helping people be guided down the path of learning without, you know, we're not selling people a product. We're not trying to, like, we're literally just like, the way I explained it the other day, it's just like, I'm not doing this for money. Like, we're not doing this for money, or at least I personally am not doing this for money. I'm doing it because we need it. Like, people need guidance. Mm-hmm. You need a goal, you need to set a plan, you need to have feedback, you need to continually be working down this plan. And so that's what we're building right now, and I think that's going to help a lot of people, like, just get on a path and move forward.
I mean, the game of golf, I feel like, is growing a lot right now too, so people are looking for a path or a way to, like, properly learn with minimal golf. When did that, like, start to build in your brain? And now that I've talked to you for a little bit, I feel like you probably dove into the weeds and, like, tried to understand everything.
So working on 18 Birdies was had a big impact on me because I did a lot of research on 18 Birdies is a golf app that's, like, a lot of score tracking and, like, stats tracking, and there's a little community there too. But we were asking the question in 2014, how much cell phone use is on the golf course? Like, back then, like, National Golf Foundation was, the statistics were like 25% of people were using their phone on the golf course, 2014-ish. If I remember that correctly, I could be off, but it was low,
mm-hmm.
You know, now it's 100%.
100, yeah.
But back then it was like, I use it for GPS. Sometimes people would use it for GPS, or I listen to music, but that was still pretty low back then. So I was learning a lot and then seeing that change over a couple of years. So that guided me sort of in the tech direction. But yeah, so I had played full time for like 5 years in California, mini tours, Monday qualifying, Q school. And then I started working on the 18 Birdies app in end of 2014 through end of 2015. And when 2016 came around, I was like, what am I going to do now? And I had played Royal Isabella here in Puerto Rico. And I was on this like, so back then when I came to Puerto Rico the first time, I was doing this thing that like that people kept saying it was like, yes, man, when that Jim Carrey movie. Mm-hmm. I said yes to everything for like, I don't know, like over a year maybe. And it was some of the best, like it was some of like the best stuff of my life with cool. that journey. So I'm saying yes to everything, and I'm in Florida for a Monday qualifier. I can't remember what it was, but the guy I'm playing with is like, dude, are you going to Puerto Rico next week? And I'm like, what's in Puerto Rico? And he's like, Puerto Rico Open, the qualifier is pretty easy to get through. Not easy, but easier than like Tampa or wherever I was. And I was like, all right. And he's like, you should go. You should totally go. And I was like, yes. So I booked a flight, came to Puerto Rico, had never been here. And like immediately messaged everybody I knew and was like, who's going to be in Puerto Rico? I don't have a place to stay, blah, blah, blah. Super budget life on tour back then. Like
yeah,
very, very right. Sleepy. Or like multiple people in a room kind of stuff. So I end up in Puerto Rico. I'm here for the qualifier, and a guy we're staying with, and this five people in one room or four people in one room. One of the guys knows Royal Isabella, and he's like, we got to go play Royal Isabella. So I'm like, all right, yes, let's go. So we go to Royal, and I'm just like blown away. I buy a hat in the pro shop because it's like the one hat that fits my weirdly shaped head. Get this hat, go back to LA after the Puerto Rico Open. And I'm on the driving range at Westchester Driving Range by LAX, not a fancy range or anything. And this guy walks by, notices my hat, and he's like, dude, where'd you get that hat? And I'm like, this resort in Puerto Rico, like my favorite golf course in the world now. And he's like, oh, I'm glad you like it. That's my family owns that resort. And I was like, what? He tells me later that when he saw my hat, because at the time I played it, Royal had only been open like 6 months or something. Like I was one of the first few hundred people to play the golf course. So when he saw my hat, and they only had one hat, it's a new course, right? So he thought I stole his hat, or like he left it somewhere and I found it. That's why he commented on it, because it was so rare to see it 4,000 miles away. So anyway, I meet Charles, son of Charlie, and Stanley is Charles's uncle, and they own this golf course. And years later, I stopped working on the 18 Birdies project for a little while. I'm in San Diego playing golf with Charles. And I'm like, what am I going to do now? And he's like, you should just move to Puerto Rico and do your online coaching at Royal Isabella. And I was like, damn, that's a big yes.
Sounds great.
But like, all right. So I had like had an old BMW, just literally put it on Craigslist, booked a flight, moved to Puerto Rico in 2016. So yeah, was here for 2 years. Hurricane Maria happened. I kind of left and came back. And ultimately, just like all my friends had moved away. Like you probably remember that being on the East Coast, but pretty massive. Like the resort was closed for like, I think 9 months. Like nobody had jobs. All my friends were like either working at the resort or someplace nearby.
Yeah.
So we just were like, well, we can't live here anymore. And so I left. I didn't really want to, but I left and I went back to California and just was like, I'll go back to Puerto Rico when like the power comes back on, basically. And then while in Puerto Rico, somebody was like, you should go to Bali. And I was like, okay, booked a flight to Bali, surfed in Bali for like 3 weeks. While I was in Bali, I had already been thinking about like minimal as a concept, didn't have a name for it or anything. I was in Bali and I had this idea for like a modern golf bag, and I was going to the bathroom. I was like on the toilet in a bathroom, and there was a sticker on the wall that said minimal, MNML, and the N was backwards, like a Russian N. Mm-hmm. It's a lot of Russians in Bali. And I was like, MNML, minimal golf. That's it. it's on, because I wasn't sure about this golf bag idea. I didn't know if I wanted to do it. Didn't know if I wanted to make a product. And then I saw that and I was like, that's the name, it's on. So I literally next day booked a flight back to California. And yeah, literally like the day I land, I'm walking from my little apartment in Manhattan, in El Porto in Manhattan Beach. I'm walking up the street to go to this like hole in the wall bar. And I walk by a building that's been vacant and boarded up for months, as long as I had been there. The lights were on and there was a for rent sign in the window. And it was like a tiny little like 800 square foot space, but I'm like, golf simulator desk. And I like text the number. I'm like, how much? And he's like, you're the first person I just put that sign up. So that was like another sign. I was like, I'll take it. And yeah, that's how it started.
Rebel Rabbit is on a mission to provide a healthier and smarter way to socialize and drink. Their alcohol-free, cannabis-infused seltzers are perfect for anybody just trying to kick back and relax after a hard day at work or on the golf course with your friends or hanging out at a party and you want to wake up and feel better the next day. Their seltzers are perfect for you. They are a great alternative to alcohol as well. Their website is drinkrebelrabbit.com. Use promo code LIFE20. You'll get 20% off your order. That link is in the show notes. But join the mission and start drinking and socializing smarter with Rebel Rabbit Seltzers.
Why was it a golf bag company? Like, what was it in that for a bag, you know, for to start?
I think it's just like, you know, the game in 2018, the game was, in at least in SoCal, was starting to shift. It was starting to become a little more inclusive, a little less stuffy.
Definitely.
You know, like tennis shoes and t-shirts versus golf spikes and polos. And not that there will always be room for the traditional golf, but there was starting to be more room for the non-traditional kind of just modern game we know now. And I like played a lot of nine hole golf and I was like, dude, there's room for like a carry bag that you can stick some beers in. You can listen to music. You can charge your phone. You can film your swing. I just was like, this would work. And so, yeah, just like started happening. Yeah. And I had good friends around me that I was like bouncing ideas off of constantly. And they were like, yeah, it just kind of morphed over the course of like 6 months.
I think that's been an incredible pivot for golf, especially with my friends. And I've had some cool, like I've had Roger Steele, this guy on the pod. He's awesome. Trap Golf founder out of Atlanta has been on the pod. Like, I think that's such an important shift in golf to bring more people in and just let it be in a way more casual and cool. Because it's such a great game that you can play your whole life. And for so long, it was just like stuck to country club kids and, you know, people with that have more money than most. The design of the bag, how did that like come to
life? No, like literally. I mean, I joke all the time that like, I feel like I'm such a minimalist, man. Like this shirt I'm wearing, I don't even know what that is. My neighbor gave it.
It's a fishing shirt. Yeah.
Fishing shirt. Okay. So the guy who lives behind me is like one of my best friends who I used to surf with all the time when I lived here. He moved away, moved back. And so we live next door. And like the other day he was like, hey Sam, you want this shirt? And I'm like, yeah, sure. I guess the point I'm trying to make is it's not one of my like life things. Like I don't look at stuff and go like, that's sick, I want to wear that. I'm just like, oh, free shirt, I'll take it. Like, even one of the shirts he gave me that I hate, I still wear it just because it's funny because he gave it to me. So I'll like, every time we go out or something, I'll wear this stupid shirt he gave me. I don't have, like, I think I have a sense for design. I think I have a sense for style, but I personally don't care about it.
Yeah. Simplicity is what I love about it.
Well, and so literally, like, the design of the bag is 100% functionality for me. I said, we want a bag that has, like, you don't need 11 zippers on the thing. First of all, you should have zippers on a golf bag anyway if you can avoid it, but you don't need 11 pockets. What are we taking? What are the essentials as a minimalist? What did I take on the golf course when I was playing a Monday qualifier? Like 6 balls, 9 tees, 2 ball markers, extra glove or two, towel, my gear, like my equipment for the round. And so looking at the bag from a perspective of, okay, a little bit shorter rounds, more casual, that's happening. What's modern in the game? Bluetooth speaker, solar power bank, filming your swing for sharing like on social or with your friends.
Yeah, and more for practice, like, yeah.
And then what's the functionality of a golf bag? Like, what does it absolutely need to do the best? And so that's what I was thinking, and that's where the napkin drawing came from. And then I gave it to a designer and was like, turn this into a tech pack, please. And I was like, I want it to be made out of this material because I like the feel and the look of that material. And then he drew this thing, and I was like, holy shit, that's a really good drawing. It was like on a computer or something, and it was so good. And then I sent that to the factory. And man, if you could have been in the room when I opened the first box of the first sample, I was just like, oh my God, so good. Like, I couldn't believe that this idea was a real thing. And the first sample was like, it was terrible functionally. Like, the factory had never made a bag with all these features, mm-hmm. and the pockets didn't work right. And we worked through a bunch of that in the first year. But the design is really just about the function, you know? And I think minimalistic design is beautiful, like in and of itself. I mean, I love minimalism. I'm like, if I see a car with too many buttons on the dashboard, I'm just like,
yeah.
Definitely. I mean, I have an old car. Like, my last car, one of my favorite car of all time was a 79 BMW 5 Series, like manual transmission, like turn knob, air, didn't have air conditioning, but like, you know, buttons and knobs, functional, no climate control. But just like from a functional standpoint, I think minimalistic design is so beautiful by itself.
Yep. But you were able to create it too with all recycled material. Like you said, the material, and I don't even know what the material is, but when I opened the golf bag on Christmas, my brother-in-law was like, dang, is that leather? Like, what is that? And I was like, I don't even know what it is, but like, what is it? And how is it? And it's all recyclable, which is crazy too.
Yeah, so a lot of like where I had like this really weird problem when I first started minimal was that, yeah, I'm a minimalist. I care about the environment as a surfer and a golfer. I spend all my time in nature. And I didn't like the idea of making a product that was going to outlive me in like the bag. Every golf bag on the planet today is going to be here for 500 years. Mm-hmm. They're just not going to be functional after 5 or 10 or whatever. Mm-hmm. And so for me, it was like, I've had this insight that like, it shouldn't, I truly believe this and I'm not perfect at it, but we shouldn't be able to buy something in our generation, in our lifetime, that's going to outlive us, but not outfunction us. Like, if I buy something that's made of plastic and it only lasts 10 years, but it's going to stay on the planet for 500, that's not fair to future generations. Like, I shouldn't be able to make that decision. That's kind of what I'm trying to say. Mm-hmm. So thinking about the golf bag, it was like, how can I make a golf bag that adheres to like my moral compass? And it was always about the Trade It Forward program, which I'm sure we'll talk about, was always like a mission, and then making it out of materials that do better, you know, than just like creating something from scratch.
Yep.
Recycled plastic water bottles is what the MR1 is made out of. And then the next bag, which is like middle of this year, hopefully like end of June, will be sold out of MR1. Not hopefully, but like, because MR1's amazing. Recycled plastic water bottles, it's a problem we have. We've got a lot of plastic that needs to be recycled. But I'm more excited about the Sea Waste project, because there's this company called Sea Waste X, and they pull fishing nets out of the ocean that are like, you know, fish are getting caught in them, but they're not fishing nets anymore. They're just trash. And that stuff is like lifetime durable and needs to be recycled. So this current bag is made from recycled plastic water bottles. The next model is made from sea waste, and it's like the most durable stuff on the planet. So when you combine sea waste or recycled plastic water bottles, you combine that material with magnetic pockets, which will last 500 years, where a zipper could get corroded or it could just break. You're starting to make a product that might outlive the customer. And coming soon also will have replaceable legs and replaceable spines. So nice. Those are the break after the zipper. So if your leg breaks, you can get a new leg. Spine breaks, you can get a spine. And for those of us,
a couple of my bags.
That's what happens, right? Either the zipper breaks and that now it's not functional because it was a key zipper, or the leg breaks and now it doesn't stand, so it's not a stand bag anymore, or the spine breaks and it just crumbles.
Folds up.
So those are the big ones that we're trying to solve and that we will solve this year. But yeah, that's like the material and the design of the bag is really just meant to fit with the moral compass of this is a product that I'm responsible for, that I'm for us to be in business, people have to buy it. Mm-hmm. And they buy this thing. I want it to last as long as humanly possible.
When the first bag go on sale, or when did you sell your first bag?
We did a Kickstarter in 2019 and we sold, I don't know if sold's not the right word, but people contributed enough money to get our first order. And that first order came on New Year's Eve of 2020. So December 31st, 2019. And I've got one here I'm going to show you because it's like fortunate that it's right.
Nice.
We crack this around a little bit. This is minimal version one. There's the original speaker. I'm testing this Bluetooth speaker here. It's just why it's hanging on. But this bag was our first one. And this is my mom's bag, actually, that I... that I yanked out of her basement when I was in Missouri last month.
It looks great, by the way.
Well, she didn't play a whole lot. I think it's my favorite. Like, it's my baby. It's my favorite bag that we've made is the very first one. But functionally, MV2 is great. MR1 has, like, a couple of assets that are super helpful. Not necessary, but helpful. It has, like, an added slip pocket, also magnetic. And it has a handle at the top. Those are kind of the big like differences that you'll see between MV2 and MR1, which makes MR1 a better bag. The new C-Waste bag will be almost identical to MR1, just made with C-Waste.
Different material. What? How did you have the idea for the Trade It Forward program?
That was, again, the problem of like being a person bringing a product to life that was going to influence people like you. Like, you have a bag, right? You bought a bag and you said you didn't need one.
Yeah.
Like, your bag was work. But so this was in my head. It's like, I'm hopeful that people buy bags. A lot of people are going to be buying bags because they're cool, because they're better than their other bag, or they have this new feature, but their other bag is still in good shape. How can I come to peace with like trying to have somebody buy this bag so we can have a real company, but then they're going to be throwing away their old one. And that's where it was like, let's find a way to get those bags that are still in decent shape in the hands of juniors, people who need them.
Yep.
And at this time, like, I would say it'll be a little while, but soon people will be buying bags more for the style and the accessory of the bag. And potentially, hopefully, it can be an aid, like it can be equipment. You can think of this thing as like helping me play better, which is an area we're aiming for as well. But you'll be buying it. People are buying bags more often now because it is cool or because it is stylish and they've got a great bag that works. And so we're facilitating that handoff. And the coolest thing, I told you earlier before we got on this call, the coolest thing we've done, like the most fulfilling thing we've done, the coolest thing we've done as a company, we didn't even do it, but the coolest thing that's happened because of Minimal is that the customers, so there's like 4,600 customers or something of Minimal, maybe a few more. They've donated 1,000 or more golf bags. And if you think about the average price of a golf bag is around $200, that's $200,000 worth of golf bags that have been donated to juniors by customers of ours that like, and I was saying like in my life, I don't even know if I'll be able to do that. Like be able to write a check for $200,000 as a donation. Like there was a pretty good chance I won't ever be in a situation where I can just write a check and be like, here you go, kid.
Here's $200,000. Yeah.
That's gnarly, right? But like the fact that this company facilitates that is the most fulfilling
How have you seen the community of golf like support your company?
Other than just like purchasing the bag, I think the biggest way is like so a good example is yesterday a guy emailed us and he was like, "Hey, I sent you guys two bags." And we're like, we do the shipping, right? We send them the bags. And he just was like, "I sent you guys two bags for the Trade It Forward program." And so like, I think people are resonating with the idea that a company, like they liked the idea that a company that they're purchasing products from is also supporting, you know, someone else or some other people. I think that from a standpoint of like the customers kind of getting on board with the program, even if they're not buying a new bag, they're just sending us bags. That's shown us. But I think also just like in the feedback from, I don't know, like our minimal golfers program, you know, the ambassadors is not new. It's been around since there's been an influencer on Instagram. We've had it back. But minimal, we don't have a traditional ambassador program where we give free product. If somebody says, "I'd like to be an ambassador for minimal golf," we tell them, we send them our manifesto, which is like, talks about who we are as a company and why we're in business. And we say, "Does this sound like you? And if so, we'd like to add you to our minimal golfers program." And what we'll do is we'll promote your journey. If you're a junior golfer or you're a college golfer or a competitive golfer, we'll share your posts and things like that. And then for you, if you'll support minimal by letting people know about our company that makes these bags out of recycled materials and the Trade It Forward program, and they pay us basically like our net, a little bit below our net cost of the bag. So we lose a little bit of money, but not a ton, but they pay a considerable amount. It's not like the minimal golfers program is $229 plus shipping. So they're getting the bag for $100 less than retail.
Yep.
But it's like, if you want to use this bag because you really like it and you're a competitive golfer and you think this bag is the right bag for you, I think $229 is a really fair price. We're not profiting on that. And it's different. Like, we've had a lot of influencers reach out and we're like, "Okay, here's the program. Do you want to be a part of it? We'd love to have you be a part of it." And then they're like, "Oh no, I was actually, you pay me to use your product. That's how this works." And then we're like, "Okay, that's not what we're in for." So the fact that a lot of these people are saying like, "Okay, I'm down with that. I'll pay you for the," and support it that way.
Yeah, I was about to say, and also support it.
Engineered Sleep makes the best mattresses out there. Sleep is the number one thing you can focus on right now to better your performance on a daily basis, and you might as well be sleeping on an Engineered Sleep mattress. Like I said, their products are the best and their customer service is second to none. Their website is engineeredsleep.com. If you use promo code LIV15, you'll get 15% off your order. So if you or someone you know is looking for a new mattress, reach out to the team at Engineered Sleep and they'll hook you up. Again, their website is engineeredsleep.com. Use promo code LIV15 to get 15% off your order.
With your entrepreneur mission and spirit, I read you like to do a lot of reading. And who are some of the entrepreneurs or businessmen that you've looked up to that have helped kind of create your vision for minimal golf?
For sure. I would say there are three right now. Two are like not identical. I'm sure they wouldn't agree, but Doug Tompkins, the founder of North Face, who went on to sell his shares in North Face and start the effort in South America to eventually give back 2 million acres as like nature preserves in South America. Doug Tompkins is like one of the most legendary conservationists that I know of. So I really like, I don't want to say I resonated with his message because I don't know that I'll ever be as impactful as he has been, but I love that book and I love that story. And then Yvon Chouinard, the Patagonia founder, I really, just after I read Let My People Go Surfing, I was like, damn, really need to put some thought into like what I'm doing as a business person. And then the last one's Elon Musk, because a lot of people are like, Sam, you've got a golf club membership store in Redondo Beach that has skateboards, surfboards, golf gear, pool table. Like, what is this even building about? And then you've got a golf bag company. And then we have this new 136.club, which is like, it's an online store where we do a drop every few weeks of a brand that's kind of young and new. And we kind of just like try to share new brands, let people in on that. So there's just like, I feel like I've got a lot of, I'm consulting for 18 Birdies, creating this new product for new golfers, creating videos for other brands. I'm doing a lot of stuff. And I feel like one of the things I'm self-conscious about is when people are like, you're schizophrenic. Like, you're doing, like, how can you have so many different products? Like, that's not healthy. Or projects, that's not healthy. And then I'm like, well, Elon Musk has more than one project and he's doing okay. So
definitely.
He's like the person I remember that exists in the world that makes it okay for me to do more than one thing at a time.
But,
yeah. From business standpoint, though, Yvon Chouinard and Doug Tompkins, those are like those two books, Let My People Go Surfing and A Wild Idea is where that Doug Tompkins book is.
Hey,
called.
Man, you are still so young in the minimal golf company space. Like, I don't know where you could be in 20 years, but you could reach some incredible heights with the bag. You touched on it, but the magnets instead of zippers. Why was that?
So in the book, Let My People Go Surfing, Patagonia talks about, or Doug Tompkins, or Yvon Chouinard and Patagonia, they have a program where you can send your stuff back for repair. And zippers are the number one failure on a garment, on a bag. So I was just like, can we avoid using them? And there's a zipper inside the bag, like inside one of the pockets, that gives you access to the internal like mechanism, yeah, in case you have a banana down there, mm-hmm, needed something with the tech kit. But as far as all the functional pockets, they're all magnetic. And it's just that, like, if a zipper fails, it's most likely going to be your favorite pocket. And if your favorite pocket breaks, that's kind of a bummer. Your favorite bag, yeah. That's why.
We've already talked about, you know, I think a lot of what you have coming up with the company or the brand, and you have a lot going on. But if people want to buy a bag or things that y'all have coming up or vision do you have for the company, what are some of those? And then how can people find you guys?
Okay. The best place to buy a bag is on the website, minimalgolf.com. The best place to see a little bit more about who we are is probably Instagram right now. And yeah, what else? What else were you asking?
No, if there was any other like future plans that we haven't shared.
Oh, this
I didn't know if you had any.
Yeah, this is really cool. So we just, like, right before we got on this call, Campbell and I, Campbell's the name on every email that anybody who gets a minimal golf email, we were talking about how to share that, because there's so much fun stuff. Like, even like this Bluetooth speaker that I'm staring at right now.
Yep.
I'm testing out a Bluetooth speaker right now that's better than our last one. And maybe not everybody's a nerd about Bluetooth speakers like I am now, but I use it
every time on the course. So
it's cool, right? It's fun. Like, can we make one that lasts longer and doesn't weigh as much and is waterproof and has great sound? That's something I think about. And I think we want to share that with people. So I will share, SeaWaste X is coming out this year, which I'm super proud of, because it's that'll be like the longest lasting golf bag ever made. I think that's the plan. And then we're making a bag. I don't know if I want to share this right now, but in the future, we're going to be making bags that are made, designed specifically as equipment.
Cool.
For the competitive player. And if you want to follow along in that journey, the best place, if you haven't bought a bag, if you buy a bag, you're in this email list. So your name is already flagged to get an email from us saying, like, here's this Bluetooth speaker Sam's talking about in the podcast. But if you didn't buy a bag, you can get on the newsletter. And if you were just like, hey, I didn't buy a bag yet, but I want to, but I also want to hear about the updates, mm-hmm, Campbell can throw you on that customer list, and we'll get you all the information you want. So newsletter on the website, Instagram, minimalgolf.com, minimalgolf@blah, blah, blah.
I wanted to, I forgot to ask, but about your artist, how you make custom designs on your bags.
It's so cool. So I'm going to give you the cliff notes on how that happened. We have only magnets, right? So typically if you have a golf bag that has your name on it or a logo, it's on one of those pockets that you could just zip all the way around and just take it off. We don't have that. And so I was like really struggling with this because I truly believe that once we sell the bag, it's not ours to market anymore. Like, it's your bag. You bought it. So how can we allow you to make it as much your own bag as possible if we can't customize it in any way? So I was really torn with this. And this guy, this amazing guy, walked by my shop that I was telling you about in El Porto, the very first one. He walked by and asked if we needed a sign. And at the time, I had really wanted to get a sign painted. He's like, I'm a sign painter. Gave me a great quote. He's standing on the ladder painting minimal golf on the front of this building. And I'm like sitting there at my desk and I'm like, could you paint on a golf? And so I gave him a couple like sample material rain covers. And I was like, could you paint on this? And I gave him some logos. He came back 2 days later and it was so good. I was just like, oh my God, could we actually do this? Like, could we actually offer a customer a hand-painted name or initials or logo or even like, look, we've had a lot of customers who like love their dogs. They'll send us a picture of their dog. Our artist will mock up like a line art version of this photo and we'll paint that dog on a golf bag. It's just like, I can't think of a better way to customize a bag. And it was just, it came from a problem, right? Like we couldn't do it, but then we found a even cooler way to do it. So yeah, it's really sick. We have two in-house artists right now and a helper, and they're just insanely talented painters. And yeah, it's a pretty sick feature.
Very, very cool. Will you leave this recording and go hit the surf?
I have a call that's going to keep me from surfing tonight. It's heartbreaking. But I got great surf this morning, and we're going to get it tomorrow.
Nice. Well, Sam, man, thank you so much for joining me. It's been a pleasure hearing the story of you and your companies and all the things you have going on. I love the bag, and so you have a ambassador right here, and I think you are right, man. I think more people are buying bags for style and for functionality, and it's only growing. So I'm super pumped to see where y'all go. Thank you for joining me. I'm a little jealous you're sitting in Puerto Rico, but
you're gonna be here soon. I know I'm gonna get that text like, Sam, I'm on my way.
Yeah.
I'm picking you up at BQN.
Let's go. But no, man, it's been a pleasure having you on.
Likewise, man. Thank you.
Thank you for listening. Give our partners some love by visiting their links in the show notes. Spink's Convenience Stores, you can find the location nearest you. Rebel Rabbit Seltzers, they're on a mission to socialize healthier and smarter, so join the mission. And Engineered Sleep, making the best mattresses in the game. You might as well be sleeping on an Engineered Sleep mattress. For me, if you could give our show a 5-star rating on your listening platform, that'd be greatly appreciated. And thank you so much for listening.